Hello, CQ, CQ, CQ. This is Whiskey 9, Bravo Golf X-Ray, W9BGX, calling CQ and listening. I got my first license, I think, when I was 14, and I built my own transceivers and antennas and whatnot.
That's Professor Alan Sahakian.
I was the chair of electrical engineering and computer science for 8 years before I transitioned now into a new role as one of the associate deans.
He's also the head of Northwestern's ham radio club on campus.
The student organization is the Northwestern University Amateur Radio Society, or NUARS.
NUARS was created in 1949. Just 8 years after Tech finished being built.
Initially, we built this room for the ham radio club and ham radio activities, but in order to maximize utilization of the room, you can see it's also being shared here for storage.
Right, I see a bunch of grills here.
Yeah.
Even without the grills and propane tanks in the corner, seemingly every inch of available space is filled with equipment dedicated to ham radio.
We have some special features in this room. You see those big cables that are going through the wall? Those cables lead out to the extreme parts of this building. With a very long cable run, like several hundred feet.
A half-foot-wide metal grounding strip runs horizontally across the walls in a single uninterrupted perimeter loop.
If there's a nearby lightning strike, that essentially can dissipate any static, gives it a path for that to go to ground.
I'm seeing all this equipment, and first of all, did you help set this up?
Yes. So I actually designed this room, and...
It's a really great room also.
Yeah, thank you. But the core of the ham radio station in the club is here. On this desk. This is what's called a station. It's called a transceiver, and we have an amplifier, and we have power supplies, and then an antenna controller.
The entire room, it's something you'd expect to see on a command deck of a ship. There's large block letters hanging from the wall that spell out the station's call sign, W9BGX.
And so I have to say that this station, with the flat terrain and Lake Michigan here, we have one of the strongest signals in the United States.
Really?
Yes. We can get pretty powerful signals.
Now, at this point, you're probably wondering, what even is ham radio? To put it simply, amateur or ham radio is a form of communication that utilizes radio waves across the electromagnetic spectrum. Is that too jargony? Let's break down what that actually means.
Our phones work on radio, and Wi-Fi, well, that's radio. Bluetooth, that's radio. It's all these invisible uses of radio.
That's Sierra Harrop. She's the Public Relations and Outreach Manager for the American Radio Relay League, or ARRL, the managing body for ham radio in the U.S.
We don't see the antennas anymore, but radio is all around us. And amateur radio is just the licensed, structured use of the same kind of radio waves that we use in our world all around us, but for recreational and public service purposes.
Think of it like this. You're listening to WNUR 89.3 FM. That number, 89.3, represents what part of the electromagnetic spectrum that our station uses to broadcast on, which is 89.3 megahertz.
So if we think about the spectrum, there's lots of different frequencies at which radio can operate. You know, some of it's picked up by our car as we're cruising down the road. Some of it is a lot lower than that and goes all the way around the world. Think AM and below that even. Well, there are international bodies that have said, hey, the spectrum is valuable. We need to allocate it. And so some of it's, you know, blocked off for cell phones, some of it's blocked off for Wi-Fi, some of it's blocked off for television.
FM radio stations in the U.S. broadcast on a frequency band that's between 88.0 megahertz and 108.0 megahertz. You may notice that's how far the dials go when you're trying to adjust channels on radio.
But there's a lot of chunks of frequencies in between there that are available for people to use. And so they use them recreationally when there's not a crisis.
Ham radio users just use other frequencies along the electromagnetic spectrum to communicate.
With the transceivers on, and what you're hearing now, we're listening to what's called the 20-meter band. That's roughly 14 megahertz. So 20 meters is the wavelength at the speed of light at 14 megahertz. Hello, CQ, CQ, CQ. This is Whiskey 9, Bravo Golf X-Ray, W9BGX, calling CQ and listening.
Beyond the differences in frequency, a key difference is that ham radio users don't broadcast. They transmit.
You kind of think in two different terms. broadcast stations are broadcasting. They're sending their message out and people are free to tune in and listen to it, but it's not a two-way street. Ham radio, we don't even call it broadcasting. We call it transmitting, because at the end of a transmit cycle, we're going to stop and we're going to listen and somebody else is going to talk back to us. And it becomes a two-way conversation. And that is what builds friendships, and that is what builds relationships and builds community.
So there's a sort of an adventurous aspect of it, but you're sending a signal off into the world, and who knows what's going to come back. You know, it's, in a sense, it's a little like fishing that way. It could be anybody, anywhere in the world that you're talking with. You might talk to somebody in El Salvador 1 minute, and then somebody in Taiwan another minute, and somebody in Sanford, Florida. And sometimes you don't. You throw in your bait. And nothing comes back. Throw in your bait again, nothing comes back. Eventually you catch something, and maybe it was something very interesting you caught.
There are three classes of ham radio licenses. Each one corresponds to the frequencies you're allowed to operate on. The VHF frequency bands,
which is where television band sort of begins, or UHF, which is higher than that.
Meaning the waves don't go nearly as far on their own.
You can find them on your handheld walkie-talkie kind of radios. The bigger antennas you tend to see operate on what we know as HF, or high frequency.
Transmitting on the HF band, you can receive and transmit signals from all over the world.
HF bounces off the atmosphere and will literally go all around the world, sometimes in both directions.
So you have to know when it's sort of like sunlight between those two places, and then the signal will sort of follow that channel. So to speak, between the ionosphere and the surface of the Earth, and it could get to that other place.
And so what the bigger antennas do is they are electrically longer, so they work on much lower frequencies, which tend to go further. So you can talk to someone in Europe, you can talk to someone in Asia, you can talk to someone in literally Antarctica with one of those big antennas that you can't just do with, you know, a handheld radio and a little stubby antenna.
HF requires equipment that can cost thousands of dollars. Beyond the financial costs, not everyone can just put up a 20-foot tall beam antenna on their roof. Professor Sahakian isn't one of those people.
When you walk into tech, I'm sure as you walk past this many times, you probably notice there's a big antenna up on the North Tower near Sheridan Road. That's the main antenna for the ham radio station. It's called a beam antenna. It's a directional antenna. If you want, we can walk out the front of the building and I can show you the antenna.
Yeah, sure. That'd be awesome. So we're outside tech on like the main courtyard, I guess, right off of Sheridan.
So that's the vertical antenna over there. But this is the one to look at.
Oh, wow. God, I didn't even realize it was right there.
Yep.
Wow.
It's very, very massive. It has a large moment of inertia, and so you have to turn it sort of slowly. But yeah, it turns.
Wow.
Even on a cold day like today, it turns.
It looks like a helicopter. It's that massive.
There's a sort of an adventurous aspect of it, but you're sending a signal off into the world, and who knows what's going to come back. It's a little like fishing that way. It could be anybody, anywhere in the world that you're talking with. And again, with the beam antenna, we can sort of narrow down the region that we'd like to contact. You might talk to somebody in El Salvador 1 minute, and then somebody in Taiwan another minute. And sometimes you don't. You know, in a sense, it's a little like fishing that way. You throw in your bait, and nothing comes back. Throw in your bait again, nothing comes back. Eventually you catch something, and maybe it was something very interesting you caught.
Much of the ham radio community makes it their goal to contact stations on the farthest ends of the Earth. Those remote transmitters are called DX stations.
I talk to Europe a lot. I talk to Africa every so often, South America. I'm still trying to get a conversation with Japan. I've talked to the International Space Station several times, and I think that's probably the most remote place I've ever successfully chatted with.
Occasionally, a team of brave operators will embark on what's called a de-expedition. These operators will set up a temporary station in the most remote parts of the world just so that they can transmit from there.
The two most difficult places to talk to on ham radio, number one is North Korea because of the political situation there. Number two is a spot in the very far southern tip of the world, just off of Antarctica, called Bouvet Island.
It's in the South Atlantic Ocean and it's ice covered.
It's not really great for human beings to survive there. Literally just a rock with some penguins and a giant sheet of ice on it.
Right now, there is one of these events going on.
And so this group of folks raised lots of money to sail out to Bouvet Island and went out there and set up a temporary radio station just so that radio amateurs around the world can talk to them.
It's such a desirable thing to contact these people. In fact, it gets organized and people are sort of lined up to make the contact.
And that's a real brief conversation. It's a signal report and a confirmation of your call sign, and that's it. It's literally to tick a box in your logbook.
So you have to like really wait in line in order to talk to these people who are out there.
Yeah, they try to make the best use of their time while they're there.
I tried, along with hundreds of thousands of other people, but I was not successful for Bouvet this time. Everybody wanted to talk to him, so I wasn't one of the lucky ones that did. But they did talk to, I believe, about 20,000. They made about 20,000 contacts around the world for the period of time that they were there.
Hello, CQ, CQ, CQ. Hello, CQ, CQ, CQ. This is Whiskey 9, Bravo Golf X-Ray, W9BGX in Evanston, Illinois. Listening.
The ham radio community currently stands at 750,000 members in the United States.
Well, sorry. No QSO today.
Very few of them are transmitting here at Northwestern.
Yeah, it's dwindled more than a little bit over the years. The pandemic actually was sort of the last straw. You have to be physically at the station to operate, and we had closed campus. So that really was a loss of continuity.
He wants to start attracting new members again now that campus is back up and running. Amateur radio in the year 2023 may seem counterintuitive. After all, cell phones and the internet have made communication easier than ever.
Students who might say, why should I do this? I can already communicate with anybody I want on Instagram or whatever.
But that increased access doesn't automatically lead to the creation of relationships with other people. What ham radio offers is a way of tapping into a global community of people who share a similar passion for communication. It's a bottomless well, where you'll always find a new person willing to talk and connect with you. Those relationships made between operators is why ham radio continues to remain relevant today.
But if people want to have the adventure, which for me it actually is an adventure.
The sheer act of transmitting means tapping into a history that stretches far beyond yourself. Just look at an operator's call sign.
My call sign's W5DX. Both my parents were amateur radio operators, and I've known it literally my whole life. My call sign's very special because it was my dad's. It's what's called a vanity call. Back in 1996, the FCC made it an option for you to pick your own call sign if it wasn't previously assigned. In the first day of vanities, my dad filed for W5DX. Five is Oklahoma and Texas. We were both from Oklahoma. And then DX, that stands for distant station, what we were just talking about with the D-Expedition. And so when he passed away in 2019, I took advantage of an FCC rule that allows you to claim the call sign of a close relative that had passed on. And so I'm able to keep my dad's call sign alive, and that's just a real privilege to operate as W5TX.
If you're interested in ham radio, the barrier to entry couldn't be lower. Harrop recommends finding your local ham radio club, which means any NU students interested should email Professor Sahakian about getting involved in NUARS. Getting licensed from the FCC is super simple and straightforward.
There is a test. It is a regulated hobby. So the FCC wants to know that you know electrical safety, that you're going to follow the rules, have to take a knowledge test. It's 35 questions, and then you're a licensed radio amateur. The easiest one, technician. I passed when I was 15, and I'm not the brightest person on the planet, anyone will tell you. So if I can do it as a teenager, anyone can do it.
As for why it's called ham radio,
it's not a proper noun. It's not an acronym. My understanding is that from the telegraph days, when somebody maybe wasn't the best at sending Morse code over the wire, they were known as ham-fisted. And so when wireless technology came about in the early 20th century, the radio amateurs at the time would be using Morse code over the radio, and the professional, you know, ship Morse code operators and things like that said, oh, those are just a bunch of ham-fisted people. And so they became known kind of pejoratively as hams, but in a spunky, fun spirit, they picked that up and ran with it. That's where we get ham radio. It's really just this hokey thing where it started as an insult, and the early operators said, yeah, we're good with that, and ran with it.
For WNUR News, I'm Nick Song.